What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 107. Today, we're going to be doing a highly requested video on apple cider vinegar. This is one of the more popular supplements out there, kind of one of the folk remedies, you know, your mother or your friend, your cousin, whatever, told you to take for 100 different reasons. So we're going to kind of go through what the best times, the best reasons why to take vinegar and what it really does and what it doesn't do, that type of stuff. But first, going to go over the article of the week, which is titled Effects of Parafostatin on Plasma Ketone Bodies in Diabetics with Hypercholesterolemia. So this one talks about statins and what they do to the body as far as ketone body production. So this is something that's come up a lot. If you listen to the podcast, you know, me and Tom both think statins are kind of the biggest scam in the history of medicine, pretty much, because they are, you know, it's a huge industry that lowers some like biomarker that is not relevant for heart disease for the most part. You know, you can go back and listen to our cholesterol podcast. We've done one on eggs and it goes over why, you know, lowering LDL is not good for heart disease. But yeah, so you kind of wanted to touch on the article real quick, Tom.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny. I just had a conversation with somebody about cholesterol today and it kind of blows my mind. It's like, haven't we talked about this enough? Like, people really still think the cholesterol is bad. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I mean, it's just like most people don't really understand that. But yeah, this is just like another reason not to take statins. Statins inhibit your body's ability to produce ketones. So that's just another way that these like statin drugs, these miracle cures for heart disease, are just another way that they're just killing you, making you more and more unhealthy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just to go over why people think, you know, LDL. Just I'll touch on it real quick because it's a huge topic. And we will do a podcast on statins eventually. I'm currently putting notes together for that. It's a huge topic and it's kind of controversial. So I want to make sure, you know, my T's are crossed, my I's are dotted, that type of thing. But we will touch on it more in the future. But people think that LDL is bad for heart disease based on the diet heart hypothesis, which was first proposed by Ancel Keys in the 70s, and that's pretty much what everyone thinks of. You know, they think, you know, eating fat raises cholesterol, specifically LDL, and high cholesterol leads to heart disease. And that's kind of the simple ass hypothesis that everyone believes, but it's been disproved so many times it's not even funny. And you can go through, like I've said, there's articles on the website that disprove it literally backwards and forwards, and it's just the evidence is out there. And I don't think the current, I don't know, health industry either has no desire to disprove the diet heart hypothesis, or the physicians out there just don't have the time to look at the current data, you know, that pretty much shows that it's just complete crap and having low LDL is not a good thing. But this one was interesting because it wasn't a known mechanism early on, you know, not like they made these statins to lower ketone production. You know, they wanted to lower LDL production, and the enzyme our body uses to produce cholesterol is it's a few enzymes, but the one that statins work on is HMG-CoA synthase, and that same pathway is what our body uses to make ketones. And you can look at we have a podcast on cleaner fuels, either ketones or fats or carbohydrates, and when our body uses fat for fuel, it eventually spills over into ketones, and it's a very clean fuel source. It's a fuel source that can be used by damn near every cell in our body, and it's a great healthy thing. So like Tom said, lowering our production of ketones isn't healthy. in any context. Like, there's nobody out there is going to say, yeah, lower ketone production, it's just not healthy. I guess unless you're a type 1 diabetic and it's mismanaged and you have ketone levels through the roof, but that's completely different. You know, that's just mismanagement of the disease. You shouldn't blame ketones for that. You know what I mean? But this is just another reason to ban statins.
Yeah, and this study is looking at type 2 diabetics, so they're non-insulin dependent, which is very different from type 1 diabetics. So type 2 diabetics would benefit greatly from being able to produce a lot of ketones, so this makes their disease much worse.
Yeah, and I mean, and we already know it's just diabetes, high cholesterol, hypertension, these are all just different forms of metabolic syndrome. So how many people with type 2 diabetes have high cholesterol?
Oh, tons of them.
Tons of them, right? The majority. It's just a fact because all these diseases come in like a bunch. And it's really because of high insulin. And there's, again, I don't want to go into that because it's a whole other podcast. But these statins are affecting those people in a way they didn't even know. Like, they're not signed up for this shit. And the doctors don't know this because they're not reading these papers, or at least the vast majority are not. And I get it why. You know, you're overworked, you're busy. I get it. You know, so many people are just kind of like wheels in a cog. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know what they're doing. They're just kind of going through their day. But don't take a statin. That's just my opinion on it. I mean, I don't know. I'll go through it more on the statin podcast. There might be a reason to take a statin, but it's not a good reason. But that's another topic for another day. If you want to read this paper, it's not very technical. You know, it's on the website. So go to TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com and you can read it. But it's just another reason. I pulled it because it's just another reason to ban statins. Like, if we already didn't have enough reasons, you know?
Yeah, I didn't know that at all. And I'm pretty sure most doctors wouldn't even notice that this is a bad thing. Because they don't even see, like, most doctors don't really think that ketone production is, like, the key to battling diabetes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't even think they really care. They're just like, oh, whatever.
I know. That's a good point. That's a very good point. I think they would read that title and be like, say, so what?
I mean, like, the doctors that are, like, you know, on board with the ketogenic diet and seeing how good it can, like, affect diabetes, they probably already know about the whole, like, cholesterol, like, scam. So they wouldn't even really care.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but hey, it's the system we have. You know, the medical system is, it's broken in a lot of ways, and statins is one of the big ways it's broken. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. But yeah, so that's it for the article of the week. Again, you can check it on the website. Feel free to read it. It's pretty good. And, yeah, let's get into apple cider vinegar. So this is something even my own, like, mother has proposed for me to take. Like, this is kind of the effects of apple cider vinegar have, I don't know, reach deep into our culture. You know what I mean? Like, men, women, any ages. It doesn't matter if you're a gym bro looking for supplements to take, or you're just kind of, you know, a 50-year-old housewife looking to get skinnier. Like, apple cider vinegar has been hyped up by damn near everyone, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. And honestly, I was kind of surprised. Like, I just went to the grocery store to buy some yesterday, because I use it to help make my bone broth, to help, like, it extracts more, like, minerals from the bones.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, like 20 times or, like, 10 times as well.
It's a lot.
I forgot the exact number, but, yeah, it was a lot. And I was just surprised, like, how many options I had. Like, I remember, I thought there was only, like, one brand for apple cider vinegar, and I was looking at, like, six different brands. And this was just at, like, a normal grocery store, not even, like, a health food one. I was just like, damn, this shit is, like, super popular now.
Oh, apple cider vinegar is big business now. It really is. And yeah, like Tom mentioned, we do have a podcast on bone broth, and so you can go back and listen to that if you want. But it's true, adding something more acidic to your broth will help extract more minerals, so it's definitely worth it. Add a few teaspoons in if you can. But yeah, I just wanted to first start off with, like, what is apple cider vinegar? Because I don't think people really know. And you could think of it really as double fermented apple juice, if you want just a plain, simple explanation of it. And it's made by crushing apples and then squeezing out the juice. Bacteria and yeast are added to the liquid to start the alcoholic fermentation process, which converts sugars to alcohol. And that's just how any, you know, beer is made. It's the same thing. And then in a second fermentation step, the alcohol is converted into vinegar by acetic acid forming bacteria from the family Acetobacteria species. So that's pretty much how apple cider vinegar is made. It's not, you know, it's not that special. It's just made from apples. And vinegar is typically no less than 4% acetic acid by mass. And vinegar is nothing new. Like, you know, I think most people know that. It's been known forever, right? And early uses for it it was pretty much just expose beer and wine. Like, if you expose beer and wine to air, is you're going to make vinegar, right? Because acetic acid-producing bacteria are present globally. Like, the shit's everywhere. So vinegar has been used by humans as long as we've been using beer and wine. And we all know that as soon as humans started drinking something that made them kind of feel tipsy, we kept making that shit. You know what I mean? Like, we've been using beer forever and wine forever. So... But
vinegar. Yeah, that's pretty much how you can tell if like a bottle of wine is like no longer good, is if it has that like vinegar taste.
Yeah, it gets a little sour, right? Exactly. And so vinegar has been sold commercially for more than 5,000 years, so a real long time. And a use of combination of apple cider vinegar and honey was used as an anti-infective remedy, and that was documented all the way back in the Old Testament and by Hippocrates. Oh, God, I butcher that name. Pronounce that shit. It's an old medicine. Hippocrates. Holy shit, why do I never pronounce that right? But that's the old doctor guy. That's all the doctors take that oath. You know what I mean? He's the original. He's like the OG doctor. But it was also used as a disinfectant for wounds during the American Civil War. So this stuff's been used for a long time. But nowadays, you know, people take apple cider vinegar for a ton of reasons. But the two that really have some real science behind it are improvements in blood sugar and aiding in digestion. So the first one I want to tackle is the improvements in glucose metabolism. And there really have been studies on this. So this first study I want to mention, and these studies are on the website so you can check it out, is there was 11 newly diagnosed patients with type 2 diabetes. And they consumed a single 30 milliliter dose of apple cider vinegar. And 30 mils, I know that's kind of obscure. That's like 2 tablespoons. So it's really not that much. And this was prior to a test meal. And they significantly improved postprandial insulin secretion, blood glucose, and muscle glucose uptake compared to placebo. So that just means after the meal, their blood sugar markers were extremely better. Those are the things you want to get better if you have diabetes. That's exactly what you want. They're all good things. But the effects of apple cider vinegar on glucose metabolism in non-diabetics have been looked at. So in a double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial of 114 non-diabetics, no significant benefits of apple cider vinegar in the same dose, 30 mils, given for 2 months. No benefits at all. So really, it seems the health of the diabetics, but not people who already have, you know, dysfunctional glucose metabolism.
Just kind of thinking about that study, I mean, what were they expecting to find? Were they expecting to find that the apple cider vinegar made people go, like, hypoglycemic?
Yeah, were they expecting it to make healthy people more healthy? I don't know, you know?
Or just make healthy people now sick because they have too low blood sugar?
Not sure. Yeah, exactly. And I think it makes sense, you know, if you're walking around and you have really high blood sugar, which, you know, diabetics usually do, you know, 150, 200, 300, I mean, shit, 500, you know, people who don't manage their diabetes, it can get real high. So it makes sense that, you know, something like this would help with it. But what's the mechanism? And the mechanism is something called AMPK activation. And AMPK stands for 5-AMP activated protein kinase. And this is an enzyme that plays a role in cellular energy homeostasis, and largely to activate glucose and fatty acid uptake and oxidation when cellular energy is low. So pretty much this enzyme is just like, hey, we need some ATP, start soaking up blood sugar, start soaking up fatty acids in the blood, which is a good thing. You know, it's what you want your body to do. And it's expressed in a number of tissues, including the liver, brain, and skeletal muscle. And really how it works, in response to binding AMP and ADP, and if you don't know, those are both forms, or I guess, I don't know if I call it forms of ATP, but what would you call it? How would you compare AMP and ADP to ATP?
I mean, it's just basically the amount of phosphates that are in there. So ATP is the active form, and that has 3 phosphates. AMP has 1 phosphate, ADP has 2 phosphates.
Yeah, so they have the same backbone.
You need 3 for you to be able to use it as energy. 1 or 2, it's not useless, but it needs to get more phosphates for it to be able to be used as a, like, energy currency.
Yeah, so that's what it is. ATP is just energy currency in our cell, and AMP and ADP are kind of just the secondary and tertiary forms of that, I guess you could say. But so the net effect of AMP activation is stimulation of hepatic fatty acid oxidation, ketogenesis, creation of ketone bodies, stimulation of skeletal muscle fatty acid oxidation and glucose uptake, inhibition of cholesterol synthesis, lipogenesis, and triglyceride synthesis, inhibition of adipocyte lipogenesis, inhibition of adipocyte lipolysis, and modulation of insulin secretion by pancreatic beta cells. So it pretty much just says, hey, we're low on energy, soak up blood supply. That's exactly what AMP activation does. So acetic acid, you know, which is in apple cider vinegar, activating AMPK, of course, that's going to tell somebody who has a blood sugar of 150 to lower blood sugar. You know, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, and a lot of other things that it's doing is it's telling your body to stop making fat. That's what lipogenesis is you creating more fat, and it's telling you to burn more fat. That's what fatty acid oxidation is. So now you're not getting fatter, and you're tapping into your body's like fat stores to be using as fuel. So not only is it helping you with this blood glucose level, but it's also going to help you lose a little bit of stored body fat.
Yeah, and if you know the real, I guess, the gist of being diabetic, and yes, we have a podcast on diabetes, so check it out, Keto for Diabetes. Excuse me, that's on the website, of course, is it's pretty much having too much fat in your body. Fat spills over. It goes from, you know, your adipocytes to your muscles to your liver to your pancreas, and then also your diabetic. So telling your body to stop producing fat if you're a diabetic is a great thing. You know, that's what you need to do. And that's one of the reasons why you saw when diabetics took acetic acid in the form of apple cider vinegar, they had benefits in those markers. You know, it's all a good thing. And so there is, you know, real science backing up the claims that apple cider vinegar can help with glucose metabolism. You know, it's not like some cure-all. You know, it's going to make you skinny within a week. But I think, you know, adding it to your regimen makes sense. You know, if you're diabetic, you're currently looking to, you know, lose weight, you're working out, you're exercising, why not add it in? And even if you're not diabetic, you know, say somebody takes it in the morning on an empty stomach, pre-cardio, like I could see something like that, you know, helping just put your body in a state to utilize more fatty acids and lose more weight. You know, that makes sense to me, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I don't want to say it's like the anti-insulin, but it sounds like it does the opposite of insulin in quite a few different ways over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And too much insulin is a bad thing. Like, it's literally the root of all disease, damn near, at least diseases of Western civilization, is too much insulin. So getting something like the yin to that yang makes sense, you know?
Yeah, that would definitely show why it helps out diabetics too much, or at least type 2 diabetics too much. It's like they have too much insulin. So if you can do something to kind of counteract just like that, work the opposite of that, mm-hmm. like you're going to see a lot of benefit.
Yeah, of course. So what about helping with digestion? Because that's another reason people take apple cider vinegar. You know, they eat a meal, they feel bloated, they feel full for hours. Like, they take apple cider vinegar and they say that helps. You know, a lot of people do that. And Tom, you said you've recently started that, right?
Yeah, here and there. When, because sometimes, like, if I'm eating, like, a gigantic steak, or maybe, a steak, like, 2 pounds of steak in one sitting, I'll notice, like, I will have a little bit of digestive issues. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's a lot of steak.
It is, yeah.
So I just started doing that apple cider vinegar. I'll take like a shot of that, chase it with some water right beforehand, and I have noticed some like significant improvements. I don't know if it was like placebo effect or if it was actually doing something, but looking at the podcast that we're doing kind of show that actually it does have some effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it definitely does. And, yeah, before I went into this, I was skeptical about apple cider vinegar because it was kind of, I don't know, too good to be true, it felt like. You know, I just was, before I looked at these notes, I came into this looking to bash apple cider vinegar. I really did. And because that's kind of my personality. Like, you know, everyone's going left, I'm like, fuck it, I'm going right. But looking through things, it does seem to help, you know. So this was my logic about it, you know. The acid in the vinegar is said to help breaking down the food we eat, you know, help in digestion. So if this is true, then the pH, which is a measure of acidity, of apple cider vinegar needs to be similar to our stomach pH. You know, so let's look at that. is we're just going to compare apple cider vinegar pH to stomach pH. So apple cider vinegar is classified as a weak acid, and I knew that, and that's why I think I prejudged it. But concentrated acetic acid is corrosive as shit, really, and it can burn your skin, it can eat through metal, all that type of stuff. You know, it's pretty strong stuff if it's real concentrated, just like any acid, really. But to go through the pH scale real quick, that goes from 0 to 14, and the scale is logarithmic. So there is a tenfold difference in the strength between each number. And the lower the number, the more acidic it is. So apple cider vinegar has a pH of 3.3 to 3.5, which is pretty acidic. Human stomach pH is anywhere from 1 to 3. And really, the lower the better. You know, the lower it is, the quicker and stronger it's going to run through these meals. And I want to add this in real quick, and you'll know why later on. White vinegar has a pH of 2.5. So the pH of apple cider vinegar is close to the pH of our stomach, which is a good thing. So having some before a meal can help with digestion. So what about the dose? Like, is 2 tablespoons really enough to impact the amount of total acid in our stomach? Because if our stomach contains, say, 1 liter of acid, is 30 mils going to make a difference? No, that's a drop in the bucket. Who cares? But the stomach volume for a human, as far as the acid content, is going to be 20 to 100 mils. And obviously that varies. Are you, I don't know, 5 foot tall woman? Are you a guy my size? Like, obviously I'm going to have more stomach acid. I can handle larger meals. So 20 to 100. And like I said earlier, 2 tablespoons is 30 mils. So 1 tablespoon is 15 milliliters. So the typical dose of 1 to 2 tablespoons does provide an adequate amount of acid to aid in digestion. So it's a good thing. And apple cider vinegar helps with digestion mainly of proteins because pepsinogen requires a pH of 3.5 to be converted into pepsin, which is the enzyme in our stomach responsible for converting long proteins into individual amino acids, which our body then absorbs in our small intestines and utilizes, you know, damn near every process in our body. And this will decrease gas and bloating that occurs after eating certain meals, since it allows the absorption of nutrients to actually take place where it's supposed to in our small intestines, rather than letting undigested food particles to reach the large intestines and can ferment there. And that's obviously what leads to gas and bloating. We don't want things to hit our large intestines that aren't supposed to be there. At least we just don't want a bunch of food.
That's what was going on with me right there. Like, yeah. That paragraph right there perfectly explains why it helped my situation out.
Yeah, because that's what, when things hit our large intestines aren't supposed to be there. Humans have very small, very, honestly, very shitty large intestines. That's pretty good, huh? I didn't even mean to say that. but we don't ferment things very well. Something like a gorilla has a huge large intestine, and they can ferment things, you know. They have very high fermentation capacity, but humans don't. So when things hit our large intestines in high volume, it causes discomfort in the form of, you know, gas and bloating, and nobody likes that feeling, you know? So apple cider vinegar does help with digestion. So when should you take it? You should take it before a meal. So 1 to 2 tablespoons mixed with some water would be great. You know, you take one bite, take some apple cider vinegar, you'll be good. And so what vinegar should you buy? Do you need to buy apple cider vinegar specifically? And that's why I mentioned white vinegar earlier. And so some brands, I'm sure you noticed this today, Tom, have the mother in it. And that's pretty much leftover fiber and the bacteria and yeast that did the fermentation. And I think it's honestly just clever marketing. I think when someone sees this health product that has some like floating shit in it, they think it's healthier. But the mother doesn't have any real health benefits. You're not getting anything from it. You get a little pectin, a little fiber, but fiber is a scam. And we have a whole podcast on that, so feel free to listen to that. But you're not getting health benefits from it. The health benefits come from acetic acid in the vinegar. So there's nothing special about apple cider vinegar. It's really just acetic acid you're looking for. And you can get jugs of white vinegar at Costco for literally $5. And I'm talking liters of this shit. So why not get that instead of expensive apple cider vinegar, you know? And on top of this, apple cider vinegar is commonly mismarketed and mislabeled. That's because people are making money off it. And we both know in the supplement world, people are trying to cut product. It's just like the dope game. People are trying to cut product and make more profit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's true. We've talked about in the past with olive oil and avocado oil.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't forget when we mentioned that, but a lot of avocado oil isn't what it says it is. And that's because people can make more money if they cut it with a cheaper oil. And it's the same thing with apple cider vinegar. So I'm going to go through some stats here, which are very telling. So in a product of sampling the 7 brands of apple cider vinegar, and these are vinegar tablets and just drinks as well, extreme variability was found that contributed to significant misbranding. So readings for pH varied from 2.9, which is good, to 5.7, which is not good. So say Tom bought apple cider vinegar product that's 5.7, that would not help with digestion. That's way too basic. It's not acidic enough to do anything. And you had acetic acid content ranging from 1% to 10%, which is a huge difference, and citric acid content ranging from 0.2%, which is nothing, to upwards of 18%, which is a lot. And you had malic acid content was 49% in one product. And malic acid is, that's what makes something really sour. It's the malic acid content. Malic acid is very sour. Go get a powder, like malic acid powder. Like, you know, you get, what are those sour candies? Those like gummies that you eat? What are those?
Are you talking like Sour Patch Kids?
Yeah, Sour Patch Kids. Those have malic acid powder around them. That's what makes them sour. So dosing recommendations on the labels varied tenfold, ranging from 300 milligrams a day to 3,000 milligrams a day. Two products, each labeled as consisting of 35% acetic acid, were found to contain only 2% and 3.2% acetic acid. And had these two products actually contained the amount of acetic acid claimed on the labels, they would have resulted in poisoning, defined as acetic acid concentrations of 20% or more. Three of the products were contaminated with yeast and mold, one of which was labeled as yeast-free, which I think is hilarious, and one commercially available apple cider vinegar product for weight loss, like specifically labeled for weight loss, was found by the FDA to be tainted with something called, I'm going to not pronounce this right, but sibutramine. And that's actually an old school kind of appetite suppressant, like a drug that you used to be able to buy over the counter. Or actually, maybe actually prescribed, I'm not 100% sure. But it's not on the market anymore. So it was deemed not safe in the late 90s, early 2000s. So somebody's cutting it with this to actually make it have an effect, which is not a good thing.
Yeah, I've never heard of that, but I mean, it doesn't sound good.
It doesn't sound good. Yeah, I never heard of it before I read this paper. And I was like, okay, that's not a good thing. So in my opinion, after looking into all this stuff, I would just go out and buy plain, cheap white vinegar. No one is making money off of white vinegar, right? So there's no reason to lie about its contents. Apple cider vinegar has a huge markup simply because of its name. And it's also the process of making it. You know, you have to use apples, all that type of stuff. So it is justified to increase the price a little bit. But it doesn't offer any additional health benefits, so why spend the extra money on it? And trust me, it's not like no one's taking vinegar because they like the taste. Like, how many people are drinking apple cider vinegar thinking it's delicious?
All right, so I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. So white vinegar is really popular with, like, Filipinos and a lot of other Pacific Islanders, especially when it comes to, like, eating fish and, like, seafood and that type of thing. Like, they dip their fish in white vinegar. Like, they love it.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so, I mean, hey, not surprised.
Yeah.
So, we might think it's nasty. I think it's nasty. I went to the Philippines a few years ago, and they kept, like, having vinegar with, like, everything. And I was like, man, I cannot eat this stuff. This is disgusting. But there are a lot of people out there that do love it. If you're going to be taking a shot of it, like, before meals, like, that's what I started doing recently, I think apple cider vinegar, while it doesn't taste great by any means, it does have a slightly better taste, so it's a little bit easier to stomach. And just because it's easier to stomach, I'm much more likely to consume that over white vinegar. And I can't get the benefits of the vinegar if I'm not drinking it. So just like from the taste standpoint, just making it palatable, I think apple cider vinegar is a lot better that way.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. If that's a huge hurdle for you, go ahead. And if you're, go ahead and do that, you know, drink apple cider vinegar. And if you're okay, you know, paying literally 10 times as much, because it's, and not even more, it might be 100 times as much if you go like per milliliter value, go ahead, you know. But I personally went to, so sometimes I'll make, what is it? It's like chicken wings, like an air fryer. And the sauce that we put over the chicken rings has vinegar in it. And back in the day, I used to just buy apple cider vinegar because I used to think apple cider vinegar was special. And you know, that's, you run through those little bottles very fast because they're not big. Apple cider vinegar doesn't come in huge containers usually. But recently, I've just started buying white vinegar from Costco, and I'm telling you, you can get gallons of it for nothing. And so I think if cost is an issue for you, you know, if you would rather spend $5 and get enough vinegar to last you a year, go ahead, go with that option. But like Tom said, if taste really is a factor, and I think all vinegar just tastes kind of nasty in my opinion, but that's a...
obviously, oh, it does. It does.
Yeah, I guess that's more of a cultural thing because I wasn't raised with that. You know, it's not in my taste buds. It's not in my genetic makeup. I just go with white vinegar. But if you do, and you do notice a difference, take the apple cider vinegar. And like Tom said, if you're not going to do the thing that provides the benefits, then it's pointless, right? So then, obviously, yeah, go with apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, and just kind of going back to, like, the whole Pacific Islander thing, like, it makes a lot of sense that they're dipping fish into it because fish is very, very high protein. So adding, like, a little bit of acid to that fish is going to make it much easier to digest. So, like, you know, after doing this podcast, I completely understand why they do it and why they love it. Their bodies probably just crave it because it makes that fish so much easier to digest. So, I mean, it makes so much sense once you know the science behind it. But, yeah, like, still, I can't do it. It doesn't taste good to me, like, at all. And, yeah, I guess it really just depends on how you're going to be using the vinegar. If you're going to be using that vinegar to make a barbecue sauce or something like that, then, you know, white vinegar is fine. But if you're going to be taking a shot out of it straight up, which I'm not sure how many people are really doing out there, I would go with apple cider.
Yeah, and that's, you talk about, shit, I forget the specific term. Is it ancient knowledge? Is that what you call it?
Or ancient wisdom?
Ancient wisdom, yeah. So that dipping fish in a white vinegar, I'm sure has been used by their grandparents and their great-great-great-grandparents back probably thousands of years. And obviously, like, that's for a reason. You know, people knew back in the day, like our grandpas and grandparents, they knew what to do before the internet. You know what I mean? They didn't need to read papers to realize vinegar helped with digestion, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure they picked that up a long, long time ago and just kept passing it on. And now people don't even know why that they do it. They just know, like, hey, that's the way it is.
That's just the way it is. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's the podcast on apple cider vinegar. Hope you guys learned something. It's, there is some science out there backing it. You know, it does some things in the body that can help diabetics. It can help with weight loss for that AMP activation. It can help with digestion for sure. So if that's something, you know, that interests you, go ahead, check it out. And, yeah, work it into your routine. You have anything else to add to it, or you think that was pretty good?
Yeah, I think that was perfect. I'm just glad it was a little bit more than just a placebo effect so I can keep doing it.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. Me and Tom had this conversation prior too, and I thought, I don't know why, I thought the pH value of acetic acid was 5. I don't know, I just thought that for some reason, and me knowing that 5 is like 100 times less strong than 3, I was like, it's not strong enough to do anything. But, you know, I learned something, and here we are, you know? So yeah.
Well, I mean, you weren't technically wrong, depending on actually what apple cider vinegar you're looking at, because of how you just mentioned how there's so much variance in different brands.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. So I guess the brand that I used to go with, I don't know if you go with, is Bragg's, and that one is kind of in a yellow container, and that one seems to be the most popular. I'm not sure if it didn't say what brands were tested in this, so maybe it's good, maybe it's not, but that's kind of the brand I used to go with. But
yeah, I've gone with that one in the past. The last couple of times I've gotten it has just been organic, like store brand. So I don't know if that is Bragg's just under a different label or not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like it's a little bit cheaper, so why not? I mean, they're both organic. I don't know what other differences there really are.
Yeah, so there's a paper on the website I actually posted with this. There is a difference between organic and non-organic apple cider vinegar, but it's pretty small, so I didn't want to bring it up. But there is a slight difference, so I would go with organic. But yeah, that's just, it wasn't big enough to really mention either way. But
okay.
Yeah, but okay, yeah, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yes, please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider and share this episode with a friend or family member. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.